Good morning. Welcome into the 9 to 10 show. It is 9:08 on Friday, the 16th day of January. Glad that you are here, as always, and brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike in Lexington. Landscaper's Corner has the largest selection of natural stone in our area. Call them at 225-9433. Our question of the day brought to you by United Structural Systems, your foundation repair and waterproofing experts, ifixfoundations.com, 859-254-7700. Our question is, how often do you use social media? How often do you use social media? You tell us at WVLKAM.com. Tune in for the results with Cruiser and Crew between noon and 3. Ray's got the day off today. We have Assistant Commonwealth Attorney Dan Lahren with us. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Jack.
Thanks for being here. It's always fun when you're here.
Always, you know? Happy to come over and visit you.
It's fun when Ray's here, but it's fun when you're here.
Well, thank you.
You've been doing this for a long, long time, this radio show, in Ray's absence, and sometimes we've been here to talk about cases that you prosecuted personally. But for those who may be new listeners, tell us about your background, where you're from, and how you got started in all this.
Well, Jack, I grew up in Michigan. I went to college for a year and didn't do so well, so I spent some time in the military. I was a military policeman. And when I got out of the service, I got a degree in criminal justice. I wanted to be a police officer.
Okay.
And there were some issues in Michigan. Mainly the economy was flat. And I didn't have any luck hiring on as a cop. So after 2 or 3 years of security work, I went to law school here at UK. And I've been here ever since. I've only ever been a prosecutor.
You've only been a prosecutor.
Right.
Interesting.
And I've only had one other job other than working here in Lexington. I was a prosecutor in Paintsville for about 8 or 9 months. And then Ray hired me, and I've been here now for about 18 and a half years.
And you also had one other part-time job that I think our listeners may be interested in.
That was the Paul Blart bit, I think. Yes.
Yeah.
I am a former security guard at the Fayette Mall. When I was in law school, I worked part-time in a number of places, one of them being the Fayette Mall.
Interesting.
I'm going out to dinner there tonight. Maybe I'll see if they still drive the same truck.
It's right. You were a mall cop.
I was a mall cop. Yes, indeed.
Have you ever regretted not going into police work?
Not really.
No.
I find as the years go on, I don't think I have the patience that our officers exhibit. They're put into some very stressful situations. And they're second-guessed constantly. They're on video most of the time or recorded. And I don't know if I would have the restraint to deal with certain members of the public as our officers do. If I had access to a taser, I'm fairly certain I would misuse that technology.
So you'd be using it very often.
I'm better off right where I am.
Well, that's good. I have heard stories on this program, in fact, of the reverse happening of prosecutors who then became police officers. I'm sure you've probably known some of those people.
Well, Ben Starkey used to be in our office. He is now at the Division of Police. There are a couple of other police officers that have law degrees. An officer that I went to law school with is on the force as we speak. Unfortunately, I'm beyond the age limit for Lexington.
Could go back if you wanted to.
I saw their commercial yesterday, and their cutoff is 37 years of age, and I think I passed that a while ago.
Okay.
So I'll just stay in court.
Well, their loss is our gain. You're a fine prosecutor. I've heard Ray sing your praises before, and he doesn't do that unless it's sincere, of course.
Well,
this,
thank you.
This morning, if we had to title our program, it would be "You Can't Make This Stuff Up." And we all know that, you know, I always say I got all my instruction about Law and Order from Law and Order, you know, from TV. The things that we see on TV are not particularly accurate to the way it is in the real world, is it?
That's fair to say. I can tell you that for about the first 10 or 15 years of my career, I watched Law & Order every week. It was Wednesday night at 10.
Mm-hmm.
People that I knew knew not to call me on Wednesday night because I was watching the show. And as time goes on, I don't watch that anymore. CSI is a show that just kills us because jurors watch CSI, and then they think that that's realistic and that we can get fingerprints and DNA and that kind of scientific evidence. And while it does exist, it's not like it is
on TV.
On television.
Right.
And that is a big hurdle for us.
Does it hurt you?
Absolutely.
Really?
We talk about it when we're picking a jury, and the jurors will generally say, well, I don't need that sort of thing. But the truth is, if we don't have a fingerprint or a DNA match or scientific evidence, it makes our job very, very difficult to secure a conviction in a case like that.
Isn't that interesting? Well, let's talk about some of these cases. You can. We're not going to talk about a case like we usually do. We'll talk about a number of them. And as I said earlier this morning in promoting that you were going to be here, these are cases that you will not see on television in these shows.
Nope. Well, I was thinking about this for the last day or two. And, Jack, you remember, there are a lot of awful things that happen in circuit court. We come over here and we talk about murders and, you know, kids getting abused, right, assaults, people burning down buildings, you know, businesses closing down because all their property gets stolen. It's pretty grim stuff. It really can be. And I thought about it, and the TV show that's the closest that I can come up with is MASH. You remember that?
Sure.
That movie from back in the 70s, and then the TV show that ran for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And MASH did a pretty good job of contrasting the horrors of war, and that was pretty grim stuff. And you'll remember, I'm sure, that the characters did all kinds of crazy things to keep themselves, sane so that they
exactly
could do their jobs.
Right.
And they did a good job with the humor in that, all the practical jokes that they played on each other, and the way they dealt with all that stress and all that, all that fear and terror and violence through humor. And
you guys do that.
We do that a lot.
Yeah.
I have to believe that the police officers have a worse job than we do because they're on the scene.
Lives are at risk. Yeah.
And, you know, by the time it gets to us, it's been some time and everybody's cleaned up and hopefully sobered up and calmed down before they come to court.
Right.
But I thought about that. And then there's an author by the name of Joseph Wambaugh.
You might remember
him. He's been writing police novels since the early 70s.
Blue Night.
That was a TV show with George Kennedy.
Yeah, he wrote that, didn't he?
Right.
Or inspired it?
He did. The Choir Boys, he's still writing novels, and he does a really good job of a similar combination. Cops using dark humor to balance the crime and violence they deal with.
Yeah.
And there's just, it's kind of slapstick, some of the funny stuff that happens to police officers and in court.
And some of the things, your dark humor is a good point, because some of the things that you guys laugh about, to the average person, they'll think, well, that's kind of twisted. And
absolutely.
Yes, it actually is. But you almost have to live the life that you guys lead to appreciate why you do that.
Absolutely. You have to have a pretty thick skin and a pretty good sense of humor to deal with this, or you just go on and do something else.
And you'd be nuts.
Right.
You go nuts.
Absolutely.
If you didn't. Yeah. Okay.
So some other shows that I think are a little closer than Law & Order and CSI are Hill Street Blues and NYPD Blue. I always enjoyed those because they had the district attorney characters in there, too. The Wire was great. I really enjoyed The Wire. And then there was a show on not too long ago called Southland. It was about, I think it was on TNT or TBS maybe.
I never saw that.
It ran two or three seasons, and it was about a patrol officer. There was a lot of things going on, but he had some great quotes. And two of them that I remember, he was a training officer, and he had a rookie, and they're driving around Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And he told his young officer partner that it was like driving through a sewer in a glass-bottom boat.
That's a pretty good line.
And it's funny, but it's kind of true.
True,
you know, these officers are in some pretty grim situations. And the other thing he said is that this is a front row seat to the greatest show on earth. And I think about that as far as law enforcement. You know, when you listen to the news, the first 5 or 10 stories seem to always be about, you know, the police, about crime and punishment, people getting convicted, getting arrested. You know, and if it's not snowing or the cats aren't playing, that's pretty much what the news is.
That's what it is,
And so I thought about that and about some of the cases, and I'll be talking about a few of them.
Is because of the kind of cases that you handle, and maybe we should even tell the folks exactly in order for you guys to handle a case in the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, first of all, they're serious crimes.
They have to be a felony.
Have to be a felony.
And that's anything that's punishable by a year or more. The kind of lowest level, I guess you would say, cases we get are things like shoplifting, flagrant non-support, things of that nature.
Up to just heinous crimes that are the worst imaginable.
Right. All the way up to and including capital murder cases.
Right. And in your business and in the police officer's line of work, which is even worse, do you feel like you're jaded sometimes?
I think that's fair.
Is that fair? Yeah. Where you deal with so many bad guys
Absolutely. It becomes important, I think, to take vacation and to get out of the law enforcement mode from time to time. When I started my career, I would go home to visit my parents and my family, and they would ask me, what kind of cases are you working on? And I'd tell stories about some of these cases. And about 4 or 5 years ago, they asked me the same thing, and by now I have a number of nieces and nephews who are young kids.
And you don't want to be talking
about it. And I launched into this story, this horrible murder, and I'm talking about recovering blood samples and fingerprints on weapons and the autopsies and so forth. And as I'm saying this, everybody sort of edges away from me, and then I stop.
It just dawned on you.
I don't need to talk about this in front of the kids anymore.
Isn't that interesting?
But it's important.
Yeah.
To maintain a perspective, and I think that we do our best to do that.
And is there I don't know the answer to this question. Is there a high burnout percentage of people in prosecution and in law enforcement where you just get burnout?
I couldn't answer for the police department. I know a lot of the officers that were on when I started are beginning to retire now. I can tell you that we have the same about 5 or 6 people that hired in within a year of me that are still there.
Still there, yeah.
And then a lot of people come through our office, and they'll be prosecutors for 2 or 3 years. They'll get court experience, and then, to be honest, they need to make enough money to support a family,
right.
So they'll move
go
on.
Private.
Or some of them learn the ropes, go into defense. Being a former prosecutor is a good feather in your cap if you want to talk on television or run for political office. So that happens too.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some specific cases. And if you want to get in on the conversation, this is a little bit different 9 to 10 show, a little different approach. Dan is very easy to talk to. And if you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear it. 253-5959, touch star. 25 minutes after 9 o'clock, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. So let's talk about some cases, Dan.
Well, part of the reason that you're stuck with me today, Jack, is that Fridays are court days for us, and right now we have a number of prosecutors that are out of the office, some preparing for trial, having witness meetings. Everybody else is over at court, and we go to court every Friday. There are 5 criminal dockets, and we sit there, and the cases run through. And some of the things that we observe, I'm no clothes horse. I wear a blue suit and a white shirt and a red tie pretty much every day.
Yeah.
And I understand that sometimes people don't have a lot of economic means or have different backgrounds than I do, but when they come to court, occasionally people will make some wardrobe decisions that I find questionable. And the first one that I thought of.
I don't even know what you're going to say.
I'm not going to identify any of these individuals by name, but I was sitting there. This wasn't that long ago. This gentleman was being sentenced for a DUI offense, and he showed up with a beer shirt on, like a party shirt, spring break type party shirt, and the judge called him on it.
Yeah.
What
did the judge say? Do you remember?
He just asked do you think that that's an appropriate shirt given your situation today? And the guy kind of babbled. I don't think he was expecting anything to happen like that.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing. It happens almost every week.
How do you, as a attorney, keep from
I'm used to it,
yeah.
And I know that most of the defense attorneys, you want your client to have his best shot. So,
sure.
You want
you
him to
think
look
that his attorney
respectable,
would have advised him in there.
So that guy I remember.
That's funny.
I've seen an orange T-shirt. Most corrections uniforms are orange.
Orange, right.
So I've seen people wear T-shirts to court that say psych ward on the front. And I just words fail me. I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, here this could be interesting. And then the guy walks up with a psych ward shirt.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Okay.
Had a narcotics case once. This has been a couple years back where the gentleman was being sentenced. I believe it was for marijuana. I don't remember exactly, but it was a drug case. And this gentleman was pretty big to start with, so he's kind of noticeable. And he had an airbrushed T-shirt that said on the front, "Don't hate the player, hate the game." And then it had marijuana leaves and money signs and guns. And he wore it to his sentencing day.
To his sentencing day?
Yeah, I think the judge put him in, is my recollection. And, this sort of thing, it just happens a lot. I had a case once, or I was in court once, and I wasn't really paying attention. The gentleman stood up, and it was his court appearance, and I looked up, and on the back of his shirt, it said, "Don't make me backhand you." And I thought, let me look this up. And I looked, and it wasn't an assault case or anything. And when he turned around, it turned out that it was for a tennis, like a pro shot.
Ah, okay. All
but
right.
But I thought, yeah. Okay, I'll buy that.
Okay.
But I thought, you know, that'd be great. This guy's up for assault, and he wears a backhand shirt. And then very early in my career, I tried a case. It was a robbery case. And it was a multi-defendant case, and one of the young men, he was 19 or 20 at the time, he showed up with a green T-shirt that said, Born to be Wild. I mean, this was a jury trial. And, you know, he walked in, and the jurors were all there already, so they'd seen it. And I just kind of looked at him, and I thought, oh, okay, maybe that's the best he had. I don't understand, but this sort of thing happens a lot. Now, it's a very common thing. I don't have a specific instance, but you remember that song of a year or two ago, Pants on the Ground?
Oh, yeah.
It's a very common thing in court for us to see people's underwear. People come in with their...
Defendants with their pants on the...
Absolutely. Yeah. It happens almost every day.
Really? Does a judge ever call them out on that?
Not very often.
No?
Not very often. That's the kind of thing. I guess it's the military background. You know, you should have your clothes should be clean. You should have a belt,
right,
you know, and your
sure.
shirt buttoned up. And these guys come walking in with, I mean, I can see their underwear, and that can't be a positive image.
It seems so totally disrespectful to our whole system.
I think it is. It is to me, but I understand that that's kind of how people dress these days, younger people.
I'll tell you, in court, hopefully.
One of my favorite things is when every now and again one of these young men will commit a crime and then try to run from the police, and then he'll trip on his pants and they'll catch him. And
well,
that's always a good day for
us.
That's
a good thing when that happens. All right, we're going to take a break, get an update from the Information Center, and be back with, you can't make this stuff up. And if you have a question or comment, 253-56. Assistant Commonwealth Attorney Dan Laren with us this morning, and we're kind of doing a lighter show about some of the cases that you see in the real world that you never see on the crime or the court shows on TV, and we've had some doozies already. This is Margo on the phone. Good morning, Margo.
Good morning. I have a question that goes back to what you all were talking about before. I'm a CASA volunteer, which doesn't go through your all's courts, but... some of the people that we have that go through, the parents, that come dressed like you all are talking about it, I just wondered if, you know, if the attorneys for their clients, if they ever talk to them, if you know if they ever talk to them about, you know, could you just... put on something better. Do they ever tell them that? Do you know if they do?
Well, I would suspect that they do. I can tell you that when we go to a jury trial, the court takes a lot of effort so that the jury won't know that the defendant's in jail. They won't let the jury see him walk in and out of the holdover, or if they see him in a manacles or a jail jumpsuit, then the trial's over.
Really? Is that right?
Absolutely.
And you see on these TV, these true crime shows on TV, this woman who killed her husband, and she looked like a crazy woman, and the defense gets her all dressed up.
Oh,
and
sure.
She looks like a Sunday school teacher by the time she gets to court.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you.
I have seen the judge in our court call people out for what they have on.
it happens every once in a while for us, too, but not very often.
It's amazing. I can't believe, you know, these are people trying to get their kids back. They're just coming in there looking like...
They don't know any better, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's it.
Well, they just don't know any better.
To answer your question, I would guess that I believe that most of the attorneys will tell their clients, look, you're going to be in front of the judge or you're going to be in front of a jury. It's important that you look presentable. And I suspect that they have maybe a stash of clothes, you know, with a blue shirt and a tie maybe, or some khaki pants. I hope so anyway.
Yeah, you would hope. Jeez.
So, well, there you go.
Pull it out that day.
Yeah, so. There you go. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's interesting. Are there rules about attorneys and their appearance in court?
You know, I don't know if they're written down. I know that we're expected to be in business attire. All the attorneys and all the males always wear a tie, shirt and a tie, or a coat and a tie.
Right.
I wear a blue suit every day. It's kind of like my uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's just a business sort of thing.
But I mean,
I guess
it's more custom than a rule. If you came in as an attorney and were not wearing a tie,
right?
Would the judge call you out on
probably?
That? Yeah,
unless there was a reason. You know, if they call you in and you're out doing something else, I could see that. But
right. But generally, you're expected as the attorney to
absolutely. Well, I think of it as, you know, if I was going to the hospital, you know, or if I was going to a dentist and the dentist walked in and he had a, you know, a tattoo that said F the world.
Right.
Or was wearing a beer T-shirt, I would think twice about
before you'd let him
about
stick,
letting him make
stick
any
a drill
decisions.
In your mouth.
Absolutely.
Here's a Facebook message that I will not give the name of this person because they've asked me not to, but it said to add to your current show, I was in court in the case of a burglar that had robbed my home, had a rap sheet of 15 pages, came mm-hmm. to trial dressed in a suit and tie, but did not impress the judge at all. So I guess... That doesn't always make, you know, assure you of...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, of course.
You hope... well, I mean, it's part of the thing. That's part of the reason we have jury trials is the jurors can look at people, and they do it to all the witnesses, police officers, or they do it to us, too. It's important. The last time I went shopping for a suit, they tried to sell me, you know, a shiny, double-breasted suit.
Right.
I told them no.
I had to be concerned.
I need to look a certain way. Or
right.
Jurors are going to think that I'm lost. So
yes,
it is important.
All right, now you have a story about a tattoo that I'd love for you to share.
I thought about this tattoos when I was a kid. Nobody had tattoos except bikers and people in the military.
Right.
You know, and nowadays
and no women.
No, I never.
Never.
Not when I was growing up.
Right.
And nowadays, pretty much everybody seems to have tattoos, and it's really not that big a deal. But
right.
It comes up. There are some other. There's some issues, you know. People will get things like swastikas or other things tattooed as they're part. If they're part of a gang, a lot of the gangs have numbers or symbols or
really?
Letters that mean different things.
Mm-hmm.
But the best tattoo story I could come up with. This was a sentencing, and I don't recall what this gentleman had done, but he was going to prison for 10 years, and it was a 10-year sentence. He could not be probated, and this guy. I don't know what his ethnic background was. He looked like a white guy to me. And he walked in, and he had a neck tattoo. And I'm a little nearsighted, so I couldn't see it. And I sort of squinted, and then I looked, and his neck tattoo said, and I quote, 100% honky. And so we're sitting there, and he starts to ask the judge. He asked the judge for a court order that would state that he did not have to get his hair cut when he went to prison because he was an American Indian. He identified a tribe, and I don't remember what it was.
Okay.
You know, he's half Cherokee or
something, yeah.
Or something like that.
Right.
And he's explained to the judge how his hair has religious significance, and so the judge has to give him this order. And the judge also saw the tattoo on his
yeah.
Neck that indicated his background wasn't what he was saying. And the judge called him on it, at which point he swore at the judge, got 6 months for contempt, and went to prison.
Okay.
So that was a rough day for him.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know, the tattoos, like I was saying, people, I know I form opinions about people.
Absolutely.
If they have visible tattoos, I understand that people get them, but, you know, these guys that show up with the grills on their teeth or
right.
the face tattoos, and then they try to challenge the identifications that the witnesses make. You know,
that's a stretch.
That was you.
You know, I heard at one time, and I may be wrong, and you may not know the answer to this, but I heard at one time that it was illegal for people to get a tattoo artist to tattoo someone above the neck. Have you ever heard that?
I believe that there are probably not statutes, but health regulations, I think, to
okay.
that effect. And
right.
now, as far as I can tell, you can get tattoos pretty much anywhere.
Anywhere, yeah. Even on the top of your head.
We had a guy that he had a scorpion tattooed on his head. I forget his name now, and it was some sort of a burglary or an assault. And he had a variety of other things, but he had a scorpion on the top of his head. And then when he would shave his head when he went to prison...
It was like he had a bug crawling on his head.
He was quite identifiable.
That was would be a look that I think would get someone's attention.
You can't make this stuff up.
You can't make this stuff up. All right, now we also know that, I guess, are all trials videotaped?
They are. When I started practicing, when I was out in Paintsville, we had court reporters that would either be stenographers or they'd write in shorthand. When I moved here to Fayette County, even back in 1996, 97, they were videotaping the trials. They used to be... on VCR tapes, now they're on CDs or digital files.
Okay.
and we review those, and you know, the things that happen in court, they're, it's open court, anybody could be there.
And of course, now there are TV shows that show those outrageous things.
Or you see it on the news. The ones that I remember, and the reason it sticks out in my head, it happened, I believe, in Scott County, because I went to law school with the judge. He was a guy I used to sit next to in law school, mm-hmm. and that was a guy that punched his attorney. He was unhappy with his attorney's performance,
I
and
remember
he punched
that.
The guy.
Right. And, I remember that story.
We have an older file from a guy that punched his attorney in our old courthouse when we were where the museum used to be now.
Yeah.
And he did the same thing. You know, he was in handcuffs. He had a history, and you could see he was unhappy with his attorney, and he lined him up, and he took the guy off his feet. And the funny thing in that video was that everybody in the courtroom began to run except for the defense attorneys. The two defense attorneys sat at the table and didn't move a muscle, and everybody else packed this guy off after he laid his attorney out.
That is funny. This is Tim. Good morning, Tim.
That's Ken.
I'm sorry?
Ken, K-E-N.
Ken, I'm sorry, Ken.
Good morning, that's all right. I got a weird tattoo store for you.
Good.
When I was 16 years old, one summer I worked in a bottling plant. And it was a 7-Up. And so we were talking about tattoos, and this old guy that worked there, he had a crooked eyes. He couldn't see real good. Anyway, he said, I'll show you a real tattoo. So he took us back in the restroom, unzipped his pants.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
And there was a fly tattooed on his member.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, TMI.
You can't make this stuff up.
You cannot make this stuff up. We're taking a break. 253 Huck and Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney Dan Laren with us. And the title of our program this morning, which we usually don't title, but this one just begs to have a title, is You Can't Make This Stuff Up. And we spend most of our time on this program obviously talking about serious cases and cases that would just kind of make you sick. And it is kind of fun, if you'll pardon that, just as a diversion, to talk about some things that are kind of funny. I guess funny things happen in everybody's profession, and being a prosecutor is no exception. Now, we were talking going into the break, Dan, about everything being videotaped now.
It sure is.
Yeah.
And well, some of the other things that have happened, and I'm to be honest with you, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. You know, people are under a lot of stress, and some of them are going to prison for a while.
Right.
Every now and again, we'll have a, you know, kind of a hurdling event where somebody will try to run out of the courtroom. And the one I remember recently was a young man who was trying to explain to the judge why he had failed to come to court on another occasion. And he started to show some body language, and I think the bailiffs are trained to recognize this.
Like he was going to bolt?
They began to edge up toward him, and then he took off. And our courtrooms have it used to be called a bar. It's just a low wall, and then there's a door. And some of the doors have stops in them, and some of them swing. Mm-hmm. And so he hurdled that, and he went out, and the bailiffs were right on him. And then his girlfriend followed the bailiff and was yelling at him. So we had a little train of people running out of the courtroom. And they caught him almost immediately. He didn't make it too far. The other case that I remember that happening was back in the old courthouse. This gentleman was going to prison for, I think, 30 years, a pretty serious sexual assault, if I recall.
Yeah.
And he was in the courtroom B on the second floor, the main courtroom in there. And he came in, and the judge sentenced him, and he kind of waited till nobody was concentrating on him, and off he went. And he went down the steps, and he was in a prison outfit. I think he was
in shackles.
I think he was shackled.
Yeah.
But he made it out, and then he got away for a while. They ended up catching him, I think, at his girlfriend's house.
Is that right? Wow.
And to tell you the truth, I'm surprised that doesn't happen a lot more often. I'm glad that it doesn't.
What do you call them? Bailiffs?
There's always there's always at least one.
At least one.
There's one assigned to the courtroom,
and they're from the sheriff's office.
That's correct.
Right.
Now the jail has corrections officers that transport the inmates and forth.
Right.
And so there's always several of them around as well.
I see. Okay. This is hang on. Hold that thought, Jim. Okay. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. You know, I agree with you on the sense of humor thing. You got to have a sense of humor to get through life sometimes.
Yeah,
get through
absolutely.
Tough times. But the question is, when a fresh crime scene, do you all go to the scenes and check out things and then work with the detectives, with the police department?
we generally don't go to the crime scenes immediately, other than sometimes for homicides, or we'll get called out for vehicular assaults or homicides. We used to go out to the scene a few years back. I remember a couple of different homicides where I got there early enough that I could get a sense of what was going on. But generally, the police handle that, and then it comes to us later.
Thanks, Jim. What about cell phones? You know, we can't go anywhere anymore without somebody starting their whatever presentation it is, telling people to turn their cell phones
absolutely
off.
Absolutely. When the bailiffs call the courtroom to order, you see it on TV. Oye, oye, silence is commanded. Court is now in session. That sort of thing.
Right.
They tell people to turn their cell phones off, because pretty much every day somebody's cell phone is going off. And the ones that stick out, usually it's a generic ring or something that you don't really recognize. But the best one I remember.
Again, I'm laughing and I don't even know what the story is.
This was an attorney, and we were sitting in there, and it was one of the smaller courtrooms, and it was really crowded. And he's sitting there, and his cell phone begins to ring. And it's a song I'm not personally familiar with, but I remembered the lyrics, or I recognized the lyrics. It said, "I'm in love with a stripper." And I guess that's some kind of a rap song or something. So his in front of the judge and 40 or 50 people, his phone starts ringing. And this was one of those courtrooms where the door doesn't swing. There's a stop. And so he ran out of the courtroom, and he almost, you know, tripped himself going over the bar. So that was a light moment in an otherwise stressful day.
Oh, that's very funny.
I've heard the Disney song "Let It Go" about once a week for the past year. So, you know,
that's
song
funny.
From Frozen.
Right.
And then one of the prosecutors in our office, who shall remain nameless, or she'll
kill me
after the show. Her phone will quack like a duck. And I guess it's for hunting or something. I don't know. But we were in court one time doing a pretrial. There wasn't a judge or a jury, but there were a lot of attorneys and the defendants there. And we're sitting there and we're talking about these cases, and all of a sudden there's this whack, 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 whack. We all kind of looked around. So that was pretty funny, too.
All right, we got a minute and 10 seconds. Grinch story.
Well, if you remember the Grinch from over the holidays, there's a line in the Grinch where he thought up a lie and he thought it up quick. And what happens for us, when we get a case, we provide the police reports and the statements and all the information to the defense. And every now and again, they will use that to make up a story that fits the facts. And it's usually not what they told the police when they were arrested, and it's usually sometime later. And the favorite ones I have are the not my pants defense. And this is where the police will arrest somebody and he'll have cocaine in his shorts, and he will attempt to explain to the judge that those were not his pants. The cocaine was there, but they're not my pants.
Not my pants.
It happens a lot. We had a young man explain that he had shot a painting. He shot a handgun over in a classroom at UK, in a class building. And he said the reason he did it is he was signing a painting. They had worked on a painting, and he shot it to signify the violence inherent in modern society.
Okay.
That didn't work.
That didn't work. They didn't buy it. Hey, Dan.
Yep.
We're out of time.
Are we done?
We're
okay.
Done. Thank you so much. Stand by. Well, we got an update from the Information Center. Live with Lee's next. I'll be back Monday morning at 6, 5 Central.
Clark Howard.
This is Clark Howard.
Insurance is a product that is sold, not bought. We don't want to deal with the negatives. People avoid it. But now there is a website, Policy Genius. You go to policygenius.com. Without the pressure of any salesperson, you can get quotes based on your exact situation. And if you wish, proceed to buy those policies. This is a way for you to use the power.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Tracy McRae. There's no question that our genetic makeup holds clues about our future health. In a recent study, scientists using data from more than 60,000 women from around the world discovered
41 new genes, all of which individually influence risk of breast cancer.
One of those scientists is Dr. Fergus Couch, who says the job is now to incorporate that DNA information into risk assessment models.
So these would be models that unaffected women would use. They would come into the clinic, and with this information, we might be able to predict who's at high risk, who's at elevated risk of getting breast cancer in the future, and perhaps even a low-risk group who perhaps don't need as much screening, you know, less frequent mammograms, for instance, over the next few years.
Dr. Couch says there's a lot of work ahead, but the potential benefit could be huge. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Vivian Williams. Chainsaws, freight trains. If you live with a snorer, you know what it can sound like. But do you know what's behind the snoring?
Snoring is the sound that occurs at night when the structures of the upper airway, so basically the throat in particular, are vibrating.
Dr. Eric Olson is a sleep medicine specialist at Mayo Clinic. He explains that when we go to bed, the soft tissue in the throat relaxes, narrowing the airway. If it narrows enough, airflow can become turbulent.
And that turbulence creates that vibration in the back of the throat.
It's a common problem. About half of men and one in four women snore. The good news is that on its own, snoring is typically not medically significant, but it can indicate another sleep disorder called sleep apnea. It can also be quite